You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
John chapter 12, we read in verse 1, 6 days before the Passover, so we're getting right down to the cross, Jesus came to Bethany, where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had just raised from the dead. Here, a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. Martha served, that's typical of her in Luke 10, she's a high-capacity servant, while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with Jesus. They reclined like this at the table. No chairs. Seems actually kind of cool. Like, hey, what's for dinner? You know, lay down, horizontal, kind of eat right at the table. So they're literally reclining at the table. Then Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. Pure nard. Wow, expensive though. This was an aromatic oil from the root nard plant that you could find in India, specifically the northern mountains of India. And you'd get it out of the root and the spike. So sometimes you'll read the spikenard oil. And this was distilled down, super expensive, had a rich rose red look, and it was just very, very sweet to the scent. The only difficulty with this is that it has the name nard. Could you imagine Calvin Klein trying to push nard today? It rhymes with lard. Like, imagine that. Like, let's just think, if Calvin Klein had an advertisement, the essence of nard. Calvin Klein, hashtag CK nard, all right? I had to do that. Anyways, pure nard he had. And there's a pint of it. This was about 12 ounces that she used. Some translations will say a pound, but this was a hefty amount of nard, and it was worth roughly a year's salary. Remember, you had to import this all the way from northern India, and then have it distilled, and then have it put into an alabaster jar all the way to Mary. Why is she holding on to this incredibly costly item? This was most likely for her dowry. Mary is never mentioned to have a husband. Neither is Martha, her sister. They're living in the home of Simon the leper. He might be dead. They're with Lazarus. And it seems like they've all pooled together to work together. So this is what she would give when she eventually got married. No dad. And so this was for her. When you get married, this is what you give to the other family. And if you don't have a dowry, you're in trouble. You can't get married. And Mary used all of it on Jesus. We read in the parallel account, which is found in Mark and in Matthew, not in Luke. Luke 7 is a different account. These two accounts, though, are synoptic accounts. They basically tell you the same story, but from kind of a panoramic perspective. They give you different details. Mark says this, Mary broke open the jar, smashed it open, and then she poured the perfume over Jesus' head. In this account, it says not just the head, but the feet as well. Now, these alabaster vials, these aren't like Tupperware today, where you can just, you know, crack it open, use a little bit of nard, close it back up, and then you're good. Once you break the alabaster vial, that's it. You used it. That was your chance to use it. So by breaking this open, that was basically saying all of that aromatic perfume, 60, 70K, a full year's wage, that was it. The scent lasted for a day or two, and it was over. She poured it on Jesus' feet. She literally put this at the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. Why the feet? This was an incredible act, not just of devotion, but also of humility. In the ancient world, to touch someone's feet, according to the rabbis, that was reserved only for slaves and Gentiles. So if you were to touch a person's feet, that was just thought to be totally degrading. And she's willing to go down and actually rub this into Jesus' feet, and she does it with her hair. If you think this is weird, it is. It is weird. Women, married women, would never show their hair in public because that was thought to be quasi-adulterous. This was a very, very scrupulous religious culture, very conservative, and so women wouldn't just let down their hair. However, Mary wasn't married. This was a way of showing she's letting her hair down. She's giving everything, and she's putting it into the feet of Jesus. Wow. And the whole house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. In the parallel account, the disciples were standing there looking at all this, and they were outraged. They were indignant when they saw this. They just looked at that costly perfume just being dumped out, and they said, "What a waste." And this is plural disciples. They're all coming at Mary's throat. And imagine, you're Mary, you do this incredible act of love, and then all the disciples of Jesus start to come after you. Ooh. And you can kind of feel it, you know what I mean? Dumping out $60,000 onto Jesus' feet. I remember one time I was with my mother, and she had a bottle of Johnny Walker Black, and she mixed it with 7-Up. And I just looked at that, and I just went, oh, I can't even look, you know what I mean? It was just so odious. And then she took that, took a sip, and then she dumped it down the drain, and I was just like, oh, why this waste? What a waste. You know, that good, what is it, bourbon, scotch? I don't know. It's tasty. And she just dumped it right down the drain. Here you got $60,000. A bottle of that's what, $60? I don't even know. But here's $60,000. What a waste. Makes you wonder, why are the disciples so hard on Mary, though? It's like, in a plural fashion, they're coming together and they're all like, yeah, you really, really screwed up at this point. What would have made them so down on Mary? Well, John gives us a parallel perspective. Verse 4, it says, Judas Iscariot, you know, the disciple who would betray Jesus, was the one who said, that perfume was worth a year's wages. We should have sold it and given the money to the poor. It was Judas. That's who was behind this whole thing, getting the disciples to hate what Mary did. But does he have a point? You're wasting this aromatic resin oil on Jesus' feet. Think of what you could have done for the poor with that money. Think about that. Does he have a point? No, he doesn't. John says in verse 6, Judas did not say this because he cared for the poor. He did not care for the poor. He was a thief, and since he was in charge of the disciples' money, he often stole some for himself. So Judas is not looking at that money. I mean, that is the ultimate trump card, to be able to say, why can't we give this money for the poor? I think everybody agrees the poor should come first. So he uses the ultimate leverage. And yet, really, he was doing this out of a total thieving, pilfering, lying perspective. He used to get the common purse and steal the money for himself. So he sees a full year's wages, and he's thinking, I could have had that. Jesus enters in at this point, and he replies, leave her alone. It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. Jesus was not properly buried. He was supposed to be anointed by his disciples. Joseph of Arimathea and Nicodemus wrap his body in myrrh and the grave clothes, but his closest disciples never had this opportunity to anoint his body with this perfume. But Mary does this 6 days before his death. So Jesus sees she's doing something for me that no one else will have a chance to do. And not to ruin the story, but before they can actually get to the tomb, Mary's there. Jesus rises from the dead. So no one had the opportunity to anoint his body the way that it should have been in the ancient world. This was standard practice. And he said she just did it 6 days in advance. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. Think about that. Now, I remember growing up going to church. We walked into one of these churches. Gold. Everything. Everything was gold. And I turned to the youth group leader and I said, how is it that we can justify this? You know, we just came from working with the abject poor. Now we're going into church, and it's just gold everywhere. And the youth group leader said, well, Jesus taught that you will always have the poor, but you will not always have me. So worship of him comes first, even among the poor. I didn't know what to make of that. I didn't know the Bible very well. Really, I didn't know it at all. Now, looking back, I realize that is one of the stupidest interpretations of this passage. Jesus is saying, you won't always have me with you physically. We won't actually have some nard hanging around to pour on his feet 6 days before he dies. This isn't talking about him being with us spiritually today, wasting money on worship services and buildings and all this other junk. Christ doesn't need that. He says, I will be with you always, even to the end of the age. So we do have him, just not in this sense. Well, that's neither here nor there. We conclude with the other version, Matthew 26. Jesus says this, I tell you the truth, wherever the good news is preached throughout the whole world, this woman's deed will be remembered and discussed. And here we are, 2,000 years later, still remembering and discussing what Mary did. Huh. Well, that's our account. Why don't we look through the different reactions to this account a little bit closer? How did Judas react to all this? Well, first off, Judas wasn't a believer in Jesus. We read that throughout this gospel. If you've been with us, Jesus said he's the son of perdition. He never believed. I chose you, but one of you is a devil. So Judas didn't believe in Jesus, didn't have a trust relationship with him. So from Judas's perspective, we're getting down to the final week of the 3.5-year ministry of Jesus. And Judas is thinking to himself, this is not going how I planned. When he said that he's the Christ, that means the king, the Messiah. And he's not showing up with any kind of kingly ideas. Remember John 6, they tried to force him to be king. He wouldn't do it. So Judas is just trying to get the money and run at this point. In fact, in the parallel account, right after this happens in Matthew, Judas leaves this event. This was the thing that pushed him over the edge. And he goes to the religious leaders and he asks, how much money will you pay me to betray Jesus? And they gave him 30 pieces of silver. Well, it's not a year's salary, but it's something. See, from Judas's perspective, anything spent on Jesus was too much. You think about the idea of waste. To Judas, yeah, if you put spikenard oil that was worth a year's salary or whatever, that would have been too much. If you poured water on Jesus's feet, that would have been too much too. Anything spent on Jesus was just worthless and over the top. So from a perspective of somebody that doesn't have a trust relationship with Jesus, somebody doesn't know him, doesn't know his love, doesn't believe who he is, thinking about dedicating your life in any sort of capacity, any capacity, would just seem completely and utterly asinine. Why would you waste your money on this, you know, foregone prophet, messianic pretender? Why do we even need him? I wasted 3 years. That was long enough. I'm just going to take what I can and leave. And what was it that really was the tipping point for Judas? We're not sure. But in my estimation, it was the broken expectations that Judas was there thinking to himself, eventually he's going to become the king, and I'm going to be there with him. He's going to be the king. He's going to take over Israel, and I'll be there with him. And at a certain point, Jesus didn't do what Judas wanted. At that point, he just said, I'm done. I'm cashing in what little chips I have, taking 30 pieces of silver. I am out of here. But what about the disciples? How did they react to all this? We read that they were outraged, and they said, what a waste. What a waste. Is it a waste? To pour an entire year's salary literally at the feet of Jesus, is that a waste? Well, let's figure out what that word means, waste. Waste. What does it mean to waste something? If I said that was a real waste, what does that mean? Well, I would define it this way. Spending your resources on something of a lesser value. Pretty generic, but I think that's a pretty good working definition. Spending your resources, what you have, your time, your talent, and your treasure, on something that really doesn't have a reward. You know what I mean? Like, if I went to go see a movie and it was awful, I mean, it was just a terrible, god-awful movie, like Barbie or something. You know what I mean? Like that movie. Somebody went, ooh, I hated that movie. Anyways, you see that movie and I'm just like, what was all the hype? That was a waste of time. That was a waste of money. I didn't like it, okay? Somebody could say, man, you really wasted your scholarship by playing too many video games. What is that? You had a resource. Your resource was a scholarship, $50K. And what did you trade it for? Video games. That's a waste. Great job. What about you've got such a brilliant mind, you know, a brilliant future ahead of you. You wasted it on drugs. So you traded something that's incredibly costly, your resources, your mind, what, just for some stimulating experiences, totally burned out your mind? Put simply, imagine, you know, you go in to buy groceries at CVS. Everything is double the price. What is that? That's a waste. If something is worth $5 and I pay 10, that's a waste. So is it a waste to expend your life, your adult life, on Jesus Christ? That's really our subject tonight. Is that a waste? To give everything that you have, to give over your life to Christ? Well, I would say absolutely it is. Yes. I don't think you should give any effort, any energy, any emotion, any time, talent, treasure, any initiative, any work, any blood, sweat, or tears to Christianity at all. Unless it's true. Let me put that a different way. If Christianity isn't true, don't waste your time. I've got better things to do on a Monday night. What night is it? Thursday. I got better things to do. Keeping my calendar straight would be one of them. And also, on a Thursday night than being here. What is this, some therapeutic thing that, well, I get really good feelings when I come here on a Thursday night. Well, okay, there's other ways to get good feelings. We don't need to be here. We don't need to be together. Don't waste your time. Don't waste your money. Don't waste your emotional energy. Don't waste your sleep. Don't waste anything if this isn't true. If it's not true, don't waste your time. However, if it is true, don't waste your time. This life is very short. I was realizing this today. I have been following Christ for half of my life at this point. Boy, did that go fast. One day you wake up, you look in the mirror, and you're just like, what happened? What happened to that person? I used to recognize him, and now it's like a, I feel like I'm looking at my father. You know what I mean? It's like, only he's gotten old too. So the whole thing is just it's moving constantly. But you'll wake up, you'll blink, and all of a sudden you got a job, you got a career. Maybe you'll have kids, maybe you got a wife, not in that order. You know what I mean? Like you wake up, you got a mortgage, you got a house, you got bills, and then, you know, you're moving along, people are talking about 401k and, you know, Roth IRAs and stuff that you're like, I don't know what this is. And it just goes by so quickly. Then you talk to older believers, you know, who are in their 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and they're toward the end of the race, and they're like, it went so fast. It's a blink, and then it's gone. Don't waste it. You know, if it's true that each one of us, each person here, one day is going to stand in front of God, Revelation 22, verse 4 says, we will see his face. You'll hear the words, well done, good and faithful servant. Come in here. Come into the joy of your master. There's so much joy here. This is heaven. Joy is the air that you're going to breathe for eternity. Just come in here. Well done. Paul says that each man's praise will come to him from God. 1 Corinthians 4. So God is going to look at everything in your life and he's going to find something for which to praise you. I've been praised by people before. It feels good, I guess. But Almighty God, could you imagine Almighty God coming in and saying, James Rochford, great job. Well done. Well done. Come in here. Just experience the joy. So much joy. You know, there's going to be a day in the future where we are going to be standing in heaven, looking out over a scene of hundreds of millions of angels flying through the sky. And there's going to be Jesus on his throne and God the Father on the throne. And every person who's ever put their faith in Jesus is going to be there. We're talking about billions of people. And they're not going to be singing. That's wrong. Read your Bible. They're going to be shouting. They're going to be shouting praises to God. The imagery here is like being in a football game, concert, screaming, shouting. And you're going to be there and you're going to be like, we are going to be here forever. There's going to be work to do. There's going to be a new heavens and a new earth. You're going to learn everything that you missed out on in this life. You're going to have plenty of time to do. Everything you think you missed, it'll be there forever. All of the suffering, Revelation says that God is going to wipe away every tear. That's all going to be done away with. And I want you to remember what I'm about to say when you're there. I want you to remember what I'm about to say right now. You are going to be there, and I'm going to be there, and we're going to be looking at all of that, and you're going to have this thought. Ready? You're going to have the thought, everything that Jesus promised was true. Down to the last word, it was exactly as he said. Everything. The angels, heaven, it's real. It really happened. See, I've put my entire adult life, all my chips, onto Jesus of Nazareth. I think he got it right. I'm putting my life into his hands. And someday you're going to see this was all real. Every single last bit of it. And in heaven, that's going to be a real place, a real reality. I know it's redundant, but it's like people think of like kind of pie in the sky, but real reality. Where you're actually going to be there, where there's going to be other people, you're going to meet God. And what is it that's going to matter when you're there? Oh man, I really went slumming this week. I started looking up different hobbies that people have. It's going to get a little bit uncool. Some people like to collect celebrity hair. Marilyn Monroe's hair. They collect hair from celebrities. Some people collect toilet papers, plural. Yeah, and I don't mean to be like judgmental, but they kind of look like the sort of people who would collect toilet papers, don't they? Like a little bit. One woman collects banana stickers. You know when you eat a banana and there's that sticker and you just throw it away? She collects those stickers. What kind of a psychopath collects banana stickers, puts them into a scrapbook, and keeps them all together? Now, I'm sure when you look at all that, you look at that and you say, that is useless, right? That's totally useless. Maybe it makes them happy. Maybe, I don't care. Who cares? I don't care. I don't want to psychologize these people. All I know is what they're doing is useless, right? And when they get to heaven, you know, if they showed up there with Marilyn Monroe's hair, God's going to be like, what am I going to do with this? I don't want Marilyn Monroe's hair. Gross. They show up with the different toilet papers rolls. Here, I got you the John Wayne toilet paper. God's going to be like, what am I going to do with this? I don't need this. Trash. What about the banana stickers? Oh, Lord, I got you a collection of banana stickers. They're all for you. Trash. They're not going to use any of that. But here's where the truth is stranger than fiction. Okay? Those are weird hobbies. These people don't think, I assume, they don't think those are really big life goals. They, for whatever demented reason, they think these are good hobbies. Okay? However, when you think about life and the things for which people are motivated, think about like getting the green master's jacket, golfer. He's standing up there before God. God, I was really good. I could hold this stick and then hit a ball into a hole. God's going to be like, what the hell can I do with that? You can't use that up here. I got the Tour de France. Yellow jersey or Tour de France, if you're stuck up. Super Bowl ring. Brady's going to show up with Super Bowl rings. I got 7 of these. God's going to be like, we don't need rings here. Gold medals. What do I need a gold medal for? Restaurant chains. Oh, God, what'd you do with your life? God, I had multiple Jersey Mike stores. Okay? We had seven of them. I had a whole chain, made all this money. God's going to be like, what do I need with substandard sandwiches? Right? I don't need that. Getting an Emmy, getting a Tony. God's, I don't need any of that. What does he need any of this for? None of it matters. None of it matters. The only thing that matters is what we did for Jesus Christ. That's what matters. People, not prestige, not power, not your possessions, people. Did you bring people from this life to the next? Were you a person who cared about people and God first rather than your stuff, rather than your comfort, rather than people's opinion of you? Why this waste? I mean, she got a liberal buffeting from the disciples, from Judas. This must have been embarrassing, but Jesus was the one who said, no, leave her alone. What she did was beautiful. Now, in many ways, I can sympathize with Judas. That makes sense. If you don't know Christ, like you might be here tonight and you're like, why would I want to live for Christ? You shouldn't. You shouldn't. You don't know him. Why would you live for somebody that you don't know? Here, however, the disciples, it was Christian disciples who were calling this a waste. See, that I just don't understand. It's weird. I've talked to people who have said, you know, I know Jesus is real. I know I'm going to heaven. I know that's going to be forever. They can articulate all that. And yet they're saying to themselves and others, I just am not willing to follow Christ in this life. This is optional. It's your choice. You don't have to do this. You can be forgiven and to sit on that, and that's the end of it. But there is this extra step of actually treating Jesus as your king, the one who's going to lead your life. And people know, yeah, heaven's real. Yeah, Jesus is real, and I don't want anything to do with that. What is with that? Randy Alcorn tells the story of this couple. They had an $800,000 house. And they were praying about this, and God put it on their heart, we need to downsize. So they said, what we're going to do is look at houses that are like $300,000. So we could take the $800,000, liquidate it, get half a mil, and still have a house that's paid off. $300,000 house in the early 2000s. That'd be like a mansion, right? So they prayed about this. They were real excited. And then Alcorn said they made a mistake. They went and talked about this with their small group. They went in and talked to the other people around them, other Christians. And they said, whoa, I think you're going a little bit extreme. What are you going to do with this money? They're like, we're going to give it to the poor. We're going to give it to people all across the world that need to hear about Christ. Whoa, I think you should slow down, really see a financial consultant. And they talked him out of it. Oh, so glad our small groups are not that way. If anybody said, I want to give $500,000 to the poor and to people across the world that have never heard about Jesus Christ, I would be so proud. I'd be absolutely beaming to think that I was in lockstep with somebody like that. Christian disciples who don't get it. Oh, that's a waste. You want to hear what a waste is? That right there. How did Jesus react to all this? He said, why are you bothering this woman? What she did was beautiful. Wouldn't you love to hear that? So you could have non-believers in your life. They wouldn't get it. I understand that though. They don't know Christ. I understand they wouldn't understand sacrifices like this. But you could even have Christians in your life that are looking at your lifestyle, the way that you're using your time and your money and your energy and everything else, and they can be looking at you just going, whoa, that's so wasteful. You could have been somebody. You had talents. You could have done something with them. Instead, you're wasting it on this. Remember this. From Jesus' perspective, he's saying, what you're doing is beautiful. I love what you're doing. And he said, wherever the good news is preached, people are going to be remembering in discussing this. The small steps of faith that we take, they're going to be remembered and they're going to be discussed for eternity. Well, how did Mary react? I don't know. Doesn't say. You're like, not Mark, not Matthew, not in John. We don't get her perspective on all this. Doesn't say. But I believe that one day we are going to meet Mary. We're going to be in heaven. We're going to see Mary face to face. And we are going to have the opportunity to look into her eyes and ask her the question, was it worth it? What do you think she's going to say? Was it worth it? Look around. Look where we are. That was 2,000 years ago. I've been with God for 2,000 years. Was it worth it? Oh, I wish I had 7 or 8 of those alabaster vials to put at the feet of Christ. The only thing I regret is not giving more. There's not a single person in this room who will stand in front of Christ and say, I wish I held back more. The only regret, if there are regrets, is that we didn't give more over into his hands. Finally, as we close up, how did you react to this? You know, what comes to your mind as you're reading through this particular account about dedicating an area of your life to Jesus? Maybe you've, you know, come into a relationship with Christ, but you've never made that second decision where you're like, I want to follow you. Well, what's holding you back? Like, do you think that you'll ever regret this? Do you think you'll make a decision and just go, oh, that was such a bad idea, putting my life into the all-loving God's hands, giving anything to God? I really worry about, you know, losing that forever. God is not going to take that and ruin your life. It's never going to happen. It's never happened before. God's never ruined someone's life. It's never happened. It never will happen. Do you think you'll ever regret trusting Christ in an area of your life? You know, I can look back on my life. I do have regrets. They have nothing to do with this. I don't have a single regret where I said, I'm going to take a step of faith. I'm going to push a little bit further, a little bit harder. I'm going to stretch myself a little bit more. There could be people in my life that I feel like we don't click. I'm going to move toward them anyway. I think about my money, my finances. I'm going to give a little bit more each year. I've never looked back on that and said I regretted that. I have looked back on areas of my life where I didn't, and I have bitterly regretted that. So, as we conclude, who do you plan to open up with about this tonight? Give me the name. Who's the person that you're thinking right now, man, this is a lot, but I need someone to talk this out with. You know what I mean? This is a lot to think about. I need somebody I can trust, that I can just open up, just share where I'm at in my heart, in my life. And think of that person in your mind. You're going to have an opportunity, and you're going to see tonight, there will be an opportunity where a door gets opened, and all of a sudden that person is there sitting by themselves. Take that opportunity. Go up to them and say, here's where I want to take things to the next level. Would you pray with me? Would you talk to me about this? And I can guarantee you will never regret that decision.